Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited to have a friend in the house today, Patrick Fuller. He is the owner of Fuller Story Video Production. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you for having me.
I am thrilled. I feel like, you know, it's a little swap of an opportunity. We had an opportunity to meet on your entrepreneur series not too long ago at the suggestion, I think, of Jody Lowe. And then Deb Karen helped me get that opportunity to meet with you. And I love who you are. I love what you're doing. And I think we have similar paths as entrepreneurs. And it'll be just fun to get to know you. And I appreciate you sharing your afternoon with us.
Absolutely. I'll start by saying it's definitely more nerve-wracking being on this side of the table.
Agreed.
I'm excited to be here.
I had the opportunity earlier this week to do an interview that will air on several different networks in May with Allie Craig for the Brandpreneur series. And it's with a magazine called Empire. Empire and then HER. So it's a women's magazine, both digital.
Clever.
Yeah, really, really clever and really an amazing opportunity. They have a huge following. And like you just said, I'm so used to asking questions and shining the spotlight on you that the second it's on me, I'm like, I don't know what to say. So I'm hoping that they got enough great content and can do some of those clipping and swapping. Like you did with me.
Right.
When we did the entrepreneur interview. And unlike that, this is live and this is recorded and there is no start and stop. So no pressure, Patrick.
I'm good.
We'll have fun. So let's first start talking about Fuller Story, the services you offer, the kinds of businesses that you love to work with, and then we'll talk about the backstory. How did you get there?
Sure. The backstory will make Fuller Story make more sense.
Do you want to start with the backstory?
No, it's okay. But I'm saying, so if I talk about it and you're like, oh, that's it. What?
It can be a winded tale if you'd
right.
like.
It's like a good movie where you're going to get the ending, but then like, you got to know the beginning before like you have the aha
Wind
moment.
The tail any way you'd like to. And if I have questions, I'll raise my hand or I'll just jump in.
Fair enough. And I do like the fact that you'll raise your hand on a radio podcast.
Right.
That's fantastic. The Fuller Story is video production, right? In its simplest form. The reality is I've always wanted it to be a quote-unquote different video production where it wasn't about the dollars and cents that we made and doing the next one and the next one and the next one. It was really about helping the client or the subject tell their story, right? Now, granted, it's a fuller story rather than tell your full story. There's a pun in there.
Love it.
That goes to my wife. She's a very punny person.
She came up with that idea?
No, but it was kind of an homage in a way. But yeah, so what we like to do, what I specifically like to do, is work with small business owners. Those that don't get, quote unquote, the press that the large organizations have. But to be honest, their businesses are probably just as good. And there's such a great story behind each and every one of them, let alone the entrepreneur themselves or the business owner has a great story. I have yet to meet somebody that we work with that I'm like, every time we do something, I always leave like on cloud nine. We're like, wow, that was a great story. Or that's a really cool idea of something to kind of relay to their customers. And I see that like our job is to take that stick figure, if you will, and polish it up and transform it in a way that A, they're super, super proud of, right? And B, other people will get. And so it's not just one person sitting in front of a camera with an interview, or it's not just telling one bit of the story, but it's infusing the music and the imagery and all those special things to really make it cinematic, but at the same time, telling a really good story.
What a great example that you gave using the stick figure, because I went right to my mind, I'm a stick figure drawer, and it will likely not ever get better than that. But you're saying that a business owner can come and say, like, this is who we are. You interview them, you get to know them, and you know to what end you want to produce something for them, and they need you. And you put the color, the life, the cinematography. You really take it and turn it into this beautiful piece of artwork that speaks to the very purpose that they want you to do this for.
Right. 80% of what we do is before we even get into shooting. because it's all about the strategy behind who you want to reach and what is the story you really want to tell. And most people, true to form, will come and tell you one or two sentences, right? And then because that's in their mind, it makes sense because they've got all of the detail, right? And it's our job to, in that strategy and upfront work, is to try to get that out, fill in some gaps, and make it a little bit more fuller. I'm going to use a pun there.
I love it.
But that's really the fun part, right? And then once we're done with that, we kind of have this conceptual idea of what we want to do. And then it's our job to, and my job in particular, to make sure that in the filming process, you're super, super comfortable. Because that's the other part where I think people fall down a lot is A, do you know somebody? And B, do you trust that somebody? And that somebody needs to be able to convey trust from the moment you walk in so that you're not umming and on and kind of kicking yourself. Because that's the worst thing that could happen when you get started and maybe you're not fully prepared or you thought you're prepared, but boy, when those lights kick on, you kind of get that deer in a headlight syndrome, is to be able to someone to coach you through it. Hey, no, we're good. We're good. Don't worry about that. We're going to get a second angle here. We're going to do this, do that. And just so they can leave being like, all right, you know, that was a good experience. And then we try to blow them away with the output, right? And so that's
who you are. That's who the Fuller story is.
Exactly.
So how did you land here? Because I know, like me, you've had other successful chapters in your career.
It wasn't, I can tell you my guidance counselor did not tell me this was an option for a reason, because I'm a stick figure guy. I would try to, you know, make them straight, if you know what I mean. But I owned a SaaS company, SaaS software for consulting companies, because at the time I also had a consulting company. And I went through a lot of different types of sales people, different types of marketing strategies, and really none of it really took off. Some of it worked, some of it didn't work, but it didn't have the impact that I really wanted. And I remember thinking, man, if I could just sit down with people, right? Enough people, once they hear the story and see what it's all about, 100% of them go, oh, I totally get that now. Like, I love this idea. Now I get it. How do I tell that story? And I thought, oh, what if I just filmed myself telling the story and just sent it to 1,000 people? And while that didn't happen, it's got me started thinking about what is the power of video? And at that point, I didn't own a camera. I'd never even seen software to edit or anything like that. I just knew this was a medium in which I thought I could leverage. And so I didn't own a camera, but I think if I remember correctly, I decided, okay, I'm gonna figure this out. So I drove down to the local Best Buy and I bought a GoPro. And I thought, this is brilliant. I'm going to get a GoPro. It's a small form factor.
I'm here.
We're good to go. I got this GoPro and I set it on a stack of books right in front of me. And I talked into it like I knew what I was doing. And it was terrible. The experience was terrible. And then I would pop that memory chip into my computer and just watch the raw video. And not only could you not hear me, but it was just, you know what I mean? It was like a giant headshot. You know what I mean? Like you could see into my nose and it was so bad. But it was then I was like, oh, with a little bit of effort and maybe a decent camera, this actually could be fun to do. And so a buddy of mine was working for me as a project manager, like the Uber PM. And I said, okay, I'm going to go get a camera and you and I are going to sit and we're going to talk about project management. And then we're going to kind of relay that into the software that we're building. He's like, shh, I could talk about project management all day. Just tell me when. So we did. We got that and some real cheap mics. And we talked about project management, which I think it did for like 90 minutes. And it was supposed to only be like a 9-minute, 10-minute thing. And we just kept going. And I thought, so I started thinking like, let's just see what happens. I learned so much just talking to him that I was like, I hope somebody takes even 10% of this. And I found a way to edit it real cheap, you know, the iMac type thing, just super cheap software. And I showed it to some friends of ours that were in that space. And they were like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. You know what you should do? Cut this up into smaller segments. I was like, oh, well, that's cool because nobody wants to watch 90 minutes. And so it was just those little pieces that kept going and going and going. And I remember thinking at the time, like, this is not my background. My background is in consulting, IT, and strategy.
Yeah, my guidance counselor in high school and college didn't tell me that this is...
I didn't even know this was a thing.
Right.
And so I remember staying up one night. You know, you can't sleep, and it's not because you're worried. It's because your mind's going about so many cool things. That's this moment, right? And I thought, I wonder what I could do with video. Like, what's even possible? What could I do with it? How much fun would this have? Because I'm having so much fun with this that I don't even want to go to my quote-unquote day job running these two companies that I own, right? I do it. I like it. But, you know what I mean? There's a part there that I don't like. And, like, there's nothing about this that I don't like. And so I didn't know if that was a thing. And I sort of said, okay, let's do, like, a 10-episode series for this product that I'm building. And let's just see what happens. So we did it. It was fun. It was nice. We figured out how to promote it. In the end, it didn't work out, right? It just, the product didn't work out. We were up against some really heavy competition. We couldn't get full featured enough fast enough. And quite honestly, I ran out of money. But I had the video thing in my back pocket now. I was like, man.
Maybe that's what that was for, right?
Right. Yeah. Maybe that was a thing, right? I had to go through that. And so I came to that gut-wrenching decision, like, okay, I got to shut this down, right? Which nobody ever wants to do, but it's one of those, like, should have done it earlier, but now I'm glad I'm doing it now. And I remember my wife, she'd say, what are you going to do now? And it wasn't from a, we need money, right? It was more of a, you can't stay at home because there's no way I'm going to handle that, right? You got to do something because I know you. And I remember thinking, wouldn't it be cool if somebody sat down with other entrepreneurs and talked about what it's like to really be an entrepreneur? What is that really like? Not the glitz and the glam and the investment, but like, how do I run my books when I don't know how to run my books? How do I hire? What does it feel like when this happens? And so she gave me that hook called a, like, eye raising, like, and? And I was like, yeah, and I can't find it anywhere. Excuse me. And she was like, and? and I was like, wow. Somebody should do that. She's like, seriously?
And?
Go do that.
Really?
And so I thought, okay, fair point. I'll call. So I called up three of my friends that I knew wouldn't say no, right? You know, we all have friends and we're like, hey, I got this crazy idea. And they're like, oh, whatever, I'm in. And so the very first guy I called, his name is Zach Barna. He owns Boom Promo. Really, really successful guy. We played baseball in high school together in college. And I was in an entrepreneurs group with him. And that's all, the only reason I tell you that is because I knew him in business, right? So it wasn't a foreign type thing. But we're sitting down having this first interview. I'm 5 minutes in and this epiphany hits me like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done. I'm having so much fun. Like, I'm waiting for like the fun cops to come be like, nope, we got to write you a ticket.
Too much fun.
Right, too much fun. And at the same time, I'm learning so much from him and about him. And this is a guy I've known for a really long time. I'm like, it's like a drug. I got to have more of this. And so I do a couple more of those. And then people start asking like, hey, that was a really good experience. I really like the output. Do you think you could help me do X with video or Y with video? And I started thinking like, well, I got the time and I got the gear. I love learning more. Maybe I can make this work. And so it slowly started kind of like, I never decided like, oh, I want to own a video production company. But it started evolving to where people would recognize the work and I was having a ton of fun doing it and learning at the same time, which is something I'd love to do anyway. And people appreciated the output. And more importantly, they appreciated the input and the strategy and the thought and things like that. So I was like, oh, let's give it a go. I guess I'm back in business again. You know, we got to come up with a clever name. And so I don't remember who told me. It's like, it's like you tell their story. Like they want the full story. And I'm like, you mean fuller story?
It's so perfect.
So anyway, that's yeah. The long-winded way of kind of how it got started.
How has being an owner of two previous businesses, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a consultant kind of paved the way for this opportunity? Because this isn't, to your point, this just isn't, hey, I know how to hit the on button on my camera and I know how to do some things to make it, you know, look magical after you've left the studio and I'm going to clean it up. There's this pulling their story out of them as well. So I don't intend to lead the question with my own answer, but owning two businesses and now in startup mode again with this one, and having been a consultant and a guide and a coach and stuff, where does that all fit in? Is there a piece of it here?
There is. And I wouldn't have noticed that before, but it struck me just recently. And so I'll say it this way. So my very first big board job was in a IT consulting shop. I did the IT consulting or strategy consultant for 10 plus years. And I will tell you that I think every college kid coming out of school should be required to do consulting for 2 years, because it teaches you so much about you, your ability to learn and adapt, build a work ethic. And so all that to say, my very first big boy job, I'm in maybe a week or two, right? And keep in mind, I'm 22, 23. I got bleach bong hair. I'm a punk kid. I think I, you know. And they hand me this 4-inch thick book, and it says .NET. And I'm like, I'm a programmer. I got this. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this will be my new textbook. I got to learn from this. No. They slide it across the desk, like almost as if it was in a movie. And I can't make this up. They slide it across the desk and go, and this is like a Thursday. They go, your client starts on Monday. Get ready. And that was them saying, read this book and be ready, because you're going to start on this client doing this work on Monday.
Oh, boy.
And that's kind of how the next 10 years worked. Here's something that you need to know. You have a paying client. Don't embarrass yourself.
And by the way, it starts now.
Yeah. TikTok, doc.
Yeah.
And so part of that is that work ethic. Like, so now, which is good in a way, it was scary. But now I look back, I'm like, I actually appreciated that I went through that, because there isn't anything that I can't learn quickly, right? I may not be an expert, but I have kind of that work ethic and I know how I learn now to be able to do that. Now, at the same time, I gravitated out of programming very quickly because there was no people interaction. And so I actually found my niche as an analyst, a business analyst. And what does a business analyst do? Asks a lot of questions, fills in some gaps. And so I think those two things were, you know, I was kind of built for those two things. And I'm taking that kind of approach now, where it's my job to ask a lot of questions, fill in some gaps, and then kind of present this game plan, if you will. Yeah. Right. And because every customer client is different, and every video output is different, which is a whole story unto itself, it's my job to quickly learn and get up to speed on what they want, how they want it, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of taken that consulting mindset and dropping it into a different platform.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Here you are, taking all those skills, creating this fuller story. Similar to my experience with Business Radio X, I didn't grow up thinking I'd have my own radio studio, or I'd even be host of my own podcast or whatever. But when I look back, I can go, oh, yeah, this fits in there. Oh, I'm using that skill set. And it's all kind of crescendoed here to this next phase of my evolution and my journey as an entrepreneur and a business person. And like you, it's so much fun.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
Somebody new every day, new projects, new opportunity to shine the spotlight on them. And in your case, in very different ways. Can you talk about some of the products then as a video production company? What are some of the projects that you have worked with folks and some of the packages that you offer?
So a lot of what we do to date has been commercial type work. And so everybody, I want to distinguish that. So you see what's in a commercial when you watch TV, and tens of thousands of dollars will go into something like that. Our clients don't have those kinds of budgets, right? They're small business, but they want kind of those types of outputs. So it's our job to figure out how to creatively tell that story with really good imagery while they provide the really good audio, right? The scripting and that kind of stuff, because we can't come up with that. We can help them massage that. So it's really more about being creative. Here's the quick storyline. And there's usually 5 points to that storyline. It's the intro, right? It's the message that you're trying to get across. It's the aha moment. It's the transformation. And there's kind of that call to action, right? And so we kind of use that as a story arc for all all of our stuff. And then it's just about imagery, because video is so much about how you feel, right, when you're watching it. So it's a little bit of music. It's really sharp cuts. It's the imagery of you hugging somebody or you doing something with that will help them remember, but then help them remember how they felt about that. Right? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
And so there's a lot of kind of emotion that we try to pull into that without making it emotional, right? Which is a very fine line. So it's things like that. There's a lot of, everybody typically likes to start, and this is how the trust thing starts, right? Everybody typically likes to start with customer testimonials and or something to do with ads, right? Well, just give me something that I can go market. Okay, right? But there's a deeper story there. You know, you're only going to get so much. Or just go interview this guy and let's put him on the website. Okay, totally makes sense.
We could do that.
Right. But what is it that you're really trying to get, right? What do you want to do with that? And so a lot of that starts to come out. And so it's really solving that one particular problem that they're going after right now, right? Because there's typically a reason that they'll call. Nobody just calls them, but like, I got this video thing. I got this spare chunk of change that right. I don't know what to do with. So they typically want to solve a problem. And after we've solved that problem, that's when kind of that floodgate of possibility opens up. Oh, what if we did this? What if we did this? One of the newest trends that I'm seeing is once they kind of get in that comfort zone, they start thinking about inbound marketing. What could I do to create content that I can carve up in bits and pieces, put it on social, put it on my website, so that my customers see me as an authority figure, right? So that's a volume of content, obviously, but it's also very specific to your knowledge base and your skills or the product or service that you offer. And so we're seeing a lot more folks coming and saying, I don't have a ton of money and I don't know what I'm doing, but I really want to create kind of this stream of content so that it gives me a better shot. I don't want to go sell people anymore. I want to use this inbound marketing, right? Where people will look at the content and there's a stage of funnels of awareness and then expertise, and then they want to do something.
And I'm thinking education and relationship, right? In all that, that business owner wants to educate their existing customer base as well as potential and continue to build that relationship.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, put it this way. When you want to buy a new car, right, you know you could go to the dealership. The first thing you do is you typically ask your friends, hey, what do you drive? What do you like? Well, that car is an easy example. But if you want legal services, right, for example, your friends aren't typically going to tell you about their legal services, because if I got to use legal, probably something either probably went wrong or I don't want to share that. So how could we create a situation where I could Google, let's say, legal services, and free content comes up to the point at which I can build some rapport and trust without actually having to meet them and feel like they're going to sell me something, right? So that's kind of a weeding out, right, mentality. It works phenomenally because you get a couple, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that got me. I feel like they know what they're doing. I trust them. Now I want to go call and work with them, right? But again, those things all take time.
And the business owner doesn't always have that understanding of how to stay in front of their customer base like that, which is why, obviously, they reach out to you and say, help us figure this piece out. So it's a little bit of marketing, a little bit of business development, and through telling their fuller story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And unlike other pieces of content, the video lives forever, right? Good or bad, it lives forever. And one of the reasons I particularly like it is because it can be leveraged and releveraged. I can take the same clip and I can cut it up for other little pieces of social. I can put it on a website. I can share it. It's got all sorts of things you can do with it outside of maybe a PDF flyer or an ebook, let's say, right? Because that used to be the hot thing. And so it's multidimensional. And that's one of the things I really, really like about it.
So many questions. And I'm curious, as you've been at this now with Fuller Story for how long?
A little over a year now.
So not too, I'm just a little bit ahead of you because I'm coming on 2 years in June, but not much. So we've talked about how much fun we're having, and that really is the truth. I, like you, lay awake at night most of the time going, oh my gosh, now I've got this next great idea. Who can I help put into play to make this happen so that I can be of more value and service to my clients? And there are times I lay awake and I'm you know, just in frustration with growing a business as the solopreneur. Can you speak a little bit to some of the challenges you've had either with this business or even the previous ones? What are some of the things that have been challenges for you?
Yeah, I'm happy to. And this is the part I feel like I'm an open book, right? Because I feel like I'm the one guy. If you look in the dictionary, it says, who has to work twice as hard to get half as far? Like my picture, my profile picture would be right there.
But mine too. Like I'm pointing at you, right? I'm raising my hand to get in there. So I would be sitting there right next to you.
Yes.
I was a straight C student in high school and even in college. And it takes me longer to learn things. But work ethic, right? That's got to come into play.
Right.
Okay. So that given, it takes you longer.
So I've also noticed that I'm a certain type of person, right? Meaning I know what I do really well. I'm a technician by trade. Like I like to get my hands dirty, that kind of stuff, versus the swizzle person is what I like to call them because they can sell the sizzle, right? I'm not the sell the sizzle kind of a guy. Like I think if you have that capability, you are like rock star status in my opinion, because that's just not a trait I've been able to really develop. And so for me, I try to stick to the things that I do really, really well. And I get those done so that to a point where I can then schedule time to do the things that I don't do really, really well. Right. And so I'm a big calendar guy, time blocking on the calendar, things like that. I measure my performance in terms of hours spent and things like that, because that helps me quantify effort, things like that. So if it's just me, then that scheduling makes a really big deal because I have to make sure that I carve out time and make myself do the things that I'm not great at until I can find that point at which I can then go get help, whether that's in-kind trade, and we've talked about that, or a contractor, right? And I've been obviously a big fan of that. There's pitfalls there, obviously. And so I've kind of developed this methodology just for me around how I evaluate those that I can leverage in that scenario and grow with versus hiring somebody in, right? And I've had plenty of employees and I've loved most of them, but they're a big risk as well, right? And so it's kind of, if you've ever climbed a rope, right? It's feet, right? Feet got to go up before the hands go up. And if the hands go up first, then you're stretched yourself too far and you're probably going to fall off that rope, right? And so it's just inching and inching and inching along the way and finding, okay, I'm not great at this. So when I can, I need to find somebody to do this thing. The problem that I run into with other entrepreneurs, other business owners is that think that way is they leave it at that. We forget the last part, which is when I can, I'm going to get somebody to help me do this one thing. And this is how I'm going to put checks and balances around that. Yes. That's the part that we typically miss. And so I spend a lot of time trying to figure out how I would, if I was to hire you to do X, how would I put checks and balances? Because if I'm putting the same amount of effort in, it's not going to work. If I'm putting zero effort in, I don't know what you're doing. There's a risk, an inherent risk there. And as a small business owner or a solopreneur, you can't take on, you can only take on so much risk, right? One catastrophic oops is probably going to be it for you, right? And so it's managing those things. And more importantly, it's also managing your time, right? And that's a big, for me, that's always been the biggest piece is time management to go along with that.
I can so relate. So when I opened the studio, I knew that I had to replace my income as an integrative coach and a business coach at about $250 an hour is what I need to do. And yet, having just opened up the studio and put money into the equipment and the licensing and everything, I was doing everything by myself because I had to. One, to your point, I had to learn how to do each piece of it so that I can then eventually pass it off to somebody and know how to help manage and get them to do it at an A, you know, A plus level that I needed. But I also didn't have this endless stream of money to just start hiring people. There are other businesses that are scale faster or start off more robust than what we're talking about. I wasn't that. So for me, one of the things that I keep doing is like, okay, if my value is around the $250 an hour mark, and I hope it'll be more someday, what jobs am I doing? The social media posts, the scheduling, and even the sitting behind here, the kind of soundboard and being a technician. What jobs can I give away either through trade or, hire? Or even internships, so that I can focus on business development and do the things like you that they don't necessarily come naturally for me, but I have to learn them. I have to show up in that space because those are the money-making activities. So for me, it's a show concept meeting. For me, it's getting out there and networking and doing more speaking. And those, some of that is fun for me, but some of it, boy, I really have to step out of my comfort zone and force myself to do it because I see how that's going to obviously continue to help me grow this brand.
Right. And I also think there's a value of perception there too. Right.
Speak
and so the more people that see you out front, then that becomes kind of, you become the face. Right. And I think a lot of the solopreneurs that I've met that come from a tactical background in my space, it's typically more the app developer, right? They came up with this great idea, this great, minimum viable product type thing, but they are not the people person, right? They are the coder, right? And very few people can play both. But if you want to actually make the business work, not just the small product or, a lifestyle type business, then I'm a firm believer of you have to also be the face. So you definitely have to take on the things that require your face to be out there.
Are there challenges in that too? I'm asking that and saying that. I think we've had a conversation previously that when you are the face, like for you and I, you are the host and the talent, if I were to use that word, of this really cool entrepreneur series, this TV show. I am the host of Phoenix Business Radio. And I also own the studio and don't have any revenue from when I host that gig. So for us, it's kind of, I think it's hard because some people will see us as the talent and the host, the person out front, the brand. Mm-hmm. And if they only see us as that, they don't understand the bigger picture of everything else we offer. So does that happen for you when you're hosting the Entrepreneur Series? Will people, could they assume that you, that that's what you do? You're in front of the camera when you're really saying, well, that's one of the things that I do, but I'm also this amazing production house and I'm the behind, the camera guy as well.
Yeah. Short answer is I get that all the time. And it's usually one of two folks. It's the folks that start, and this is really an interesting dynamic that I'm really noticing now because I'm paying more attention to it. It's like the red car syndrome.
Yeah, right.
Is those that know me from the Entrepreneur Series know me as, and we'll use your word, as the talent, right? And they, I mean, if you're in the studio and you're doing it, you know that I turn the cameras on, we do the mic check, but that's not really how they formulate it because the end piece is me talking to you and kind of pulling this great story out of you. The folks that don't see me through the Entrepreneur Series see me as slight commodity, right? If they don't know me, meaning I've actually had more than one person as I show up for a gig in a studio or whatnot with a client saying, oh, I thought there was going to be like a cell phone and something else. And I was like, really? Like, what gave you that perception? But it's interesting that the folks that are the paying clients that don't know me through the Entrepreneur Series do not see me as on-screen talent, right?
Right.
And I can get that, right? Because I'm the one behind the camera. I'm the strategist. I'm the one trying to help them pull their story out. But again, I'm the one with the headphones on saying, okay, yep, go ahead, and coaching them through it. I'm totally okay with that. Here's the thing that really gets me. The entrepreneurs that I have on the Entrepreneur Series, and I literally got this yesterday, I believe. Guy called me and he's been on the Entrepreneur Series. Said, hey, I got this idea for a commercial. Here's a YouTube video for something I want to kind of emulate. And I was like, hey, this is a really cool video. It's actually not that hard to do. Here's how it would get structured. He was like, oh, okay, cool. That sounds like a cool idea. And I said, and I did the obligatory, would you like me to help you with that? He's like, I don't really see you as somebody that could do video like that. I see you as just, you just do interviews. And it's fascinating to me that the words and the actions and the strategy equal, yes, I like it, but he sees me as the interviewer, right? And I only do those kinds of videos.
He values you enough to make the call and say, what do you think about this?
Right.
As a pal.
Yep.
And somebody he admires and trusts. But the opportunity to do that work for him has been lost on him somewhere in there because he doesn't see that, so you do that?
Right.
Yeah. I so get that challenge.
Right. And it's not, and I don't want to paint it in the picture like he's bad or there's something wrong with that. It's an interesting, we go back to perception.
Yes.
It's an interesting perception dilemma, right? Especially as a small business owner.
Yes.
If you have to be known for something, what do you want to be known for?
And that's key. That's so key because if we are not articulating that out loud with a neon sign when we're without it being rehearsed and kind of crazy and weird, but if people don't see that, then of course we leave it up to their interpretation, their perception. I often, it's happening less and less, but when I go and do networking things and I'm on, you know, social media a lot, kind of from the talent perspective, right? The face of the company. Some people will often come up and say, oh my gosh, how's that little podcast going for you? How's your show? And it doesn't bother me anymore. It used to really frustrate me because I kept thinking, I'm building an empire here. This is not just a little podcast or just a little show, which again, there's nothing wrong with people who are doing that. People do great things with that. I wanted people to see that I'm building something much bigger here. This Karen has a show at her studio, and so do a lot of other business owners and entrepreneurs. And I began to listen to how I'm showing up in conversations, and it wasn't on them, it was on me. I had to do the educating and not be pissy about it either.
Sure. Yeah, two things come to mind there. One is I always keep, and almost to a fault, I will always remind myself when I get frustrated, things like that, is what could I do better, right? Even if it wasn't, quote unquote, my fault, but how can I take that on is what can I do better? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, going back to the perception, is I am not the kind of guy that wants to voice my opinion or put it out there of how great my life is or what I'm doing now, right? So from a social media perspective, and I'll use that as a data point, I'm not the guy that you would look at my accounts and be like, oh, he had a tuna sandwich yesterday, which would never happen. I don't like tuna.
A delicious gourmet tuna sandwich.
but there are other people that will do that. And I think to a degree, you almost have to fight fire with fire and be that person. You know, in your case, I'll use your example of showcasing how all these other people come through and do shows and things like that. Just, if nothing else, and I know this sounds terrible, just to prove a point. That isn't just a little podcast, that you are actually building something bigger without saying, because none of us really want to say, excuse me, I'm actually building something bigger, right? We want to show you somehow, right? Yeah. And I think that there's going back to tying in the perception and the small business, is somehow you have to be able to pull that off, because that's perception. Although you don't think it matters all the time, right? And you want to be known for your good work, but that perception matters.
It does matter. Yeah. Tell me about, so you're in this, you know, build up mode again and establishing yourself in this video production version of your business. How has home life shifted? You mentioned earlier kind of in passing that you're building a lifestyle business. That's often how I refer to the studio as well. Even though I've been working 50, 60, sometimes 70 hours a week, my goal is to, you know, really have a life with my family and some breathing room once I get this to a certain space. And that's already beginning to happen now that I'm getting close to year two. Is this a lifestyle business for you? And how would you define that? And how, why would you choose this instead of running these other couple companies that you've had?
So I'll say this, and a lot of my entrepreneur friends will, they'll be shocked, or they'll kind of, I'll probably get some looks in the hallways like, oh no. I am intentionally creating this as a lifestyle business. I'd like to go on record on the 6th of February saying that. But I want to point it out is intentional. The reason is I've tried and gotten dangerously close to that million plus business before. And it is A, not easy, right? There are a lot of things in there that are not easy. It's a struggle. But at the same time, there's some really awesome things that happen when you get up in that revenue range, especially if your profit margins support some of these really great things that you can do. But at the same time, I learned the very hard way, and it took me a long time to voice this because I'm actually embarrassed by it, is I learned the hard way that when I'm in that mode, when I'm in that build, get to the million, get to the next stage, whether that's the 2, the 3, the 5, whatever that is for your business, because not everybody scales appropriate, you know, at the same rate. I was not a nice person. And I'm dumbing that down way down. Like, I was just mean and unhappy, frustrated all the time. And, you know, I've got a wife. We're just about to hit 13 years, which still shocks me, side note, that she stuck that long. And I've got 2 kids. And to be unhappy, and I use the word miserable from time to time, with a wife and 2 kids is different than being unhappy as a single person. When you have a wife and 2 kids, when you have a family, it's your job, in my opinion, to A, provide, and then B, to be kind of that structure that they can depend on and rely on and things like that. I was not that guy. And I kind of hated myself for it. But the problem is you don't really see it until either A, it's too late, or B, you somehow got out of it. And I knew I was unhappy. I wasn't having much fun, but I didn't realize how mean and not nice, I'll say, I was being. And those were my words. Nobody ever said, oh, you're being a meanie today, Dad, anything like that. But when I look back, I'm like, I was short, ill-tempered, and just not a guy. That's not who I want to be. I was also very out of shape, which is different for me as a former athlete. I didn't eat well, and my stress levels were probably taller than my 6-foot frame. And it wasn't until I had shut down the businesses and I did have a little bit of that time off that those levels started coming down. And I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, like,
who had I become?
Yeah, this is not who I want to be. And I have associated that with trying to hit that, you know, million plus mark for now. So for now, and I've got a 9-year-old son and a very soon to be 6-year-old daughter, I want to be the best husband and dad I can be. And for me, that does not mean going after big scale business, right? I want to be able to come home on Tuesdays and help with tutoring. I want to be able to pick up my kids. I want to be nice to my wife. You know what I mean? I want her to love me for who I am, not because she signed a piece of paper and put a ring on a finger. And so for me, that's the intentional part. Now, that doesn't mean I don't want to grow, right? And I don't want to have some employees and do those kinds of things. It's just that I'm being very intentional and very careful with what I'm doing and how I'm doing it.
I'm fascinated by that because I've only known you through this fuller story. This version of your career and your existence. And I would never have guessed that there was this other side of you that was, I'm going to use the term, so hell-bent and determined to reach this success as determined by numbers that you had shut everything else out and as you said, weren't nice. So I couldn't even imagine that version of you.
And I was, to be honest, I mean, it wasn't that I was outwardly mean to employees and people like that.
No, I didn't get that.
I reserved that for home life.
Well, which
is even worse.
Right. There, I get that statement, right? When we're in business and we're trying to just grind and get things done and move to that next thing that we have to on our trajectory for success, when we go home and we're depleted,
right,
the people that we are oftentimes short with, both in time, but also in love and affection, is our family.
Right.
And my husband and I are both building businesses at the same time. He opened his auto shop in Chandler about 6 months before I opened the studio. So we're both in that position. And we have to remember, we have to remind each other to take a breath, because we too want to build this as a lifestyle business. And at the same time, we've got to make, you know, we've got to make money to have that lifestyle.
Right.
But I also don't want to be so crazed and glazed over that I miss my 11-year-old growing up. It's funny you mentioned, yesterday was a busy full day. And I thought, because I can make my own schedule, I'm like, all right, I'm going to front load the day early in the morning. I know I'm going to pick him up from school, which I don't usually get to do anymore. Mike does that for me. And he'd been wanting to go on a bike ride. So we got on our bikes. I kept my work clothes on. We went on our bike ride for about 45 minutes. And then I had to come home and clean up slightly and get to another meeting for work. But I cherish that. And I know he does too. So that's the part of this that I love, that, you know, when I was clocking in and working for corporate or for education, I didn't have that luxury.
Right. I totally get that.
Yeah. Love it. Tell us a little bit about the deciding point. Was it for some people, it's a wake up and go, oh, wow, this isn't working anymore. And they pivot and they decide to do something else. Was it that clean and concise for you, or was it kind of an evolution and a shifting? How have you found that you grow and you evolve into these new things that you're trying and doing?
It seems to be a little bit different each time. Sometimes it's financial, meaning, okay, I have so much money and I can see, right, the end of this, and I can predict or forecast when that will happen, and I need to get on in front of that. Other times it's, I just don't enjoy this anymore. You know what I mean? It's kind of like when I was writing code. That was my first big boy job, right? Was writing code.net code. And I loved the heck out of that thing. You know what I mean? To be able to take a series of numbers and letters and put it together and then compile it and then show it to somebody on the web was like, mind-blowing, right? But there was a part there after a number of years where I was like, I don't love it. Like, I kind of grew out of that. And then it was, okay, people. Okay, cool. Strategy. I'm a thinker. Anytime I get to think and have, you know what I mean? Like, outthink you or come up with strategy, you know, things like that. Like, I'm all in. And then there was a part where it's like, okay, well, life's changing now. And I need to be more responsible, and I need to make more money. More importantly, not make more money. I need to spend less money. I need to save more money. And so then it was, okay, well, I need to change some habits there. And so I think for me, it evolves, right? Depending on, and this latest thing was a combination of all of them, go figure, where the money was being depleted, right, that I had set aside to build this product. And there was a lot of self-convincing. I should have done it earlier. Oh, it's one last, we're going to get this going, or we'll get this sales guy, we'll do this other new release. But the money doesn't lie, right? You know, numbers just flat out don't lie. When it's gone, when it hits zero, there's no automatic refill button. That coupled with, I'm not loving this. Like, I won't say feared. I didn't ever fear it. But when I just flat out didn't want to go to a client meeting, I knew right then and there, like, okay, something's got to change, right? And so those two things combined was like, okay, I have enough. I've learned enough through one of the other situations where it was spend less, save more, right? To save some money. I can shut this down, and I got some background. I got some money saved. I think the best thing that I could do for myself and for my family would be to not do anything for a little while, right? And I know that sounds bananas crazy, but sometimes I think we just need that reprieve of don't jump into the next crappy relationship, right? Instead, why not just be with you for a little while, work on you, so to speak, and let's see what happens. And I honestly don't remember who it was. I wish I could, because I owe them. I literally owe them everything. Is somebody had recommended a book to me when I was shutting it down called Living Your Best Year Ever by Darren Hardy. And it's a workbook, right? It's like 70 pages that you read. And then there's like another 70 pages that you do like every week. And this thing completely changed my life and my perspective on what I wanted to get out of my life, right? And or that particular year, having the best year ever. And had that book been introduced a year before, it would have done nothing, right? 6 months later, it would have been too late. But there was something about this book that at that time I got that allowed me mentally to say, go ahead, take a little bit of time off. You're going to be fine. It's more important for you to figure out what you want to do next and be happy with it than to jump into the next thing because you need to make a buck, right? Because it's that's a now problem, right? Where really the problem was before you didn't save enough, or at least in my scenario, right? Or you didn't do something, right? So I took that time and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, my life is completely, completely different, all the way down to physical. When I shut it down, I was about 125, 130 pounds, which isn't terrible for a 6 foot frame, but also had a little over 28% body fat, right? How do I know? Because I had it checked, because I knew I wanted to get healthier. As I sit in front of you, I'm 189 pounds at 16% body fat.
Wow.
Right? And I've never been, like, I'm more fit now than I was in high school.
Even as an athlete.
Even as an athlete.
Yeah.
Right? And which is really doesn't, again, I'm not shaming anybody or anything like that. It's really to say, like, that was one of the things that I thought would help me change my life and be happier is if I had an outlet to sweat. Right? The more I sweat, the better I felt.
And that's proven to be true.
And it's proven to be true. Go figure.
Yeah. Love it. Oh my gosh, you're fascinating. This is very fun to get the inside Fuller story.
There you go.
The Fuller story guy himself. Wow. Is there anything that I haven't thought to ask that you would want our listeners to know around the entrepreneurial journey or really Fuller story and who you're serving today?
But the only thing that I've learned a lot, let's put it this way. I have learned, I just released episode 27 of the Entrepreneur Series.
27?
Literally this morning with a young lady by the name of Lauren Bailey.
I know Lauren. She's been on with us a handful of times.
She's
phenomenal.
Amazing, right? And I'm not just saying that because I love her taco shop.
So for our listeners, really quick, Lauren Bailey is with Upward Projects,
yes,
which is the company that owns several restaurants that are uber popular here in the Valley. The Joyride Taco, Postino's, the W...
Windsor.
Windsor, sorry. Yep, Windsor.
And Churn.
Yeah. And Lauren's just so real and just so down to earth and savvy, isn't she? And a little sass too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think the sass really is the cherry on top.
It is. I think that's the draw, right?
Exactly.
So episode 27, and it's out there today already.
Yep. Just dropped today.
Yeah.
And what I've learned through doing 27 of these now is not one entrepreneur's journey looks like another.
No.
But the common thread amongst most of them, when things get tough, and my situation included, is we have a tendency as a human being to compare ourselves to somebody we look up to, which is very, very dangerous. So that's the one thing. That's typically what I would think about when if I was coaching somebody or just having a conversation. So it's like, what do I do? The very first thing is find where you're comparing, right? And stop, or try to stop. Because ultimately what you're doing is internally you are saying, I'm not good enough. I need to be better. And I need to be like this person. And you have no idea what that person has endured, what that person was given.
Or where they're headed,
right? You're just living in that one mini moment, right? Without knowing any sort of the backstory. And that's a very dangerous game to play. Mm. And so I say that out loud just so I can continually remind myself, because it's so easy as a small business owner or somebody who's just trying to make a go at it to look at somebody and be like, I want to get there. And you're immediately comparing that. Now, granted, everyone's got to have a goal and a place to get to, but
when it becomes self-deprecating, that's when it's dangerous, right?
Absolutely.
It's great to go, okay, what can I learn to get to that place? Maybe that's even a person that I could ask.
Right.
And I know we run in circles where we can ask those questions and people are happy to provide that information and help give us that leg up. What I hear you saying is when it is keeping us stuck or having us play small in the comparison is when it's healthy and we have to keep ourselves in check.
Absolutely. And the last piece I will say, and this is a thread throughout, 100%. And if even if it wasn't, it's something I firmly believe in, is the people around you, even the people you don't know yet, there is a small handful of those that are willing to help. You have to be willing to ask. People that you've never met, maybe you don't know, maybe you reach out to them on LinkedIn, right? It doesn't have to be somebody you physically know, you can physically go talk to, but there are enough really good intentioned people out there that if you ask some of the right people, and sometimes you got to find some wrong ones to find some right ones, but if you ask enough of the right people, some of the right questions, it can be life-changing.
And you never know what door is going to open after that.
Absolutely.
That's a great reminder for me as well. I'll take that. I'll take many of these pieces of wisdom, but that nugget in particular, yeah, lands in a very soft space because oftentimes I want to be the one to know how to do it and I want to figure it out myself. And I don't even know how to ask. Well, why does it have to sound, you know, why does it have to come out a certain way? Just simply be willing to say, can you help me with this?
Right.
Yeah. Love it. Thank you so much again for a great afternoon and just a fabulous conversation around so many things. I think our listeners who are solopreneurs and human beings really can relate to so much of what we shared. How can folks get a hold of Fuller Story and where do we find you out there in the world?
Sure. Website's cleverly named FullerStory.com.
That's perfect. FullerStory.com.
Patrick.Fuller at FullerStory.com. Or if you're into social networks, everything's at Fuller Story. Pick your social, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you'd like.
You're there.
I'm there.
Very good. Again, thank you so much, Patrick, for giving me the opportunity to shine the spotlight in your direction as you did for me when we had a chance to do my little segment episode on the Fuller Story on your entrepreneur series as part of the Fuller Story. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.